He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think.
This is the School of Motion podcast. Come for the MoGraph, stay for the puns.
I mean, I don't think it takes away from any of it. It's like, you still need to do the animation. You still need to massage those curves. But it's more like, what happens when you need that same curve to repeat 50 times? Okay, you'll copy and paste your keyframes. Amazing. And then you want to tweak the timing. And now you're like, oh, crap. Like, that's a pain to do without some sort of tool or something. Versus if you use the handy-dandy loop-out expression, you just have to do the keyframes once, and the expression will do the work of repeating it a bunch of times. It's not really about taking work away from you. It's about making your life easier, kind of like augmenting the work you're already doing to save you headache and hassle.
If you go by YouTube play counts, one thing is clear. After Effects artists love expressions. And why not? They're cool. They're like this black magic voodoo that lets you automate all kinds of stuff and create rigs and funky setups for your animation. They're also a little intimidating because you have to, you know, type code into a computer like some kind of programmer. Well, Zach Lovett and Noel Honig are here to tell you, don't be afraid. Expressions are not only accessible to even the most code-phobic artists, but they can actually open up lots of new possibilities creatively and professionally for you. Which is why we are launching Expression Session, a 12-week expression boot camp for After Effects artists. This class has been in the works for about 2 years and is the culmination of a ridiculous investment of time and resources. We made sure that the artwork for the class is killer, that the projects are based on real-world use cases, and that the lessons build on one another in a logical way. Noel has been on the podcast already, episode 31, and so has Zach, episode 18. So if you want a little more backstory on these two, you can listen to those episodes. But today, we are answering questions from our audience about expressions and about the new course. Even if you have no desire to learn the dark art of expressionisteering, I don't know what the actual term is, you'll learn a lot from this one. We go pretty deep. All right, let's get to it. Well, Zol, as we've been calling you both, it is awesome to be talking to you yet again. I've been talking to you a lot over the past several months, but it's always a pleasure. Thank you for doing this.
No, thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Joey.
Now, you've both been on the podcast before, and we're going to be linking in the show notes to those episodes. So anyone who would like to hear more about Zach and Noel's backgrounds and experiences, you can check those out. But for everyone else, I'd love to just kind of catch up really quickly. And I know that you two have been working at least for a couple of weeks on this class, maybe even a month or so. I don't know. I feel like it's actually been closer to 2 years. But so aside from that, because you're now pretty much at the end of the production cycle, what have you two been up to since we heard you on the podcast? Why don't we start with Noel? What have you been doing with yourself?
Right on. Well, right now I'm sitting up at the Verizon offices because I've been called in here to do some work for Verizon, and that's been really fun. And just been juggling a lot of, you know, holds, basically. After the class, which took like 5 months really of hardcore work, kind of what I really wanted to do was just start animating and designing again. So I've just been kind of saying yes to some fun jobs. And yeah, I'm also working on a documentary, a feature-length documentary that I'm doing all of the graphics for. So that's kind of a fun job. And I'm actually using my newfound experience with coding to make it a lot more fun for myself too. So that's kind of fun.
Oh, very interesting. And I know, you know, because we were talking a little while back and you were telling me that you were starting to get some pretty exciting phone calls. You know, some of the big studios that we all sort of dream about working for are now starting to call you. And I'm curious if you have any sense of sort of what's helped you get to that level. I mean, you know, when you were on the podcast last time, I think you had just done the Saturday Night Live open. So, I mean, you're already doing really amazing stuff, but I know you've been working with Golden Wolf and other awesome studios like that. So what's kind of helped you get, you know, get to that next level?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a mystery to me as well, but I'm going to say that I was working, I started the Drawing Room with a partner and we were really trying to build up it up as a studio. And then at a certain point, he dropped out and I sort of started offering myself up for freelance again. And I think that's really the thing, is that like I had built up a body of work that I had been doing as myself as the Drawing Room. And so I really got a chance to put my own personal stamp on a lot of projects. And then when I went freelance again, I feel like people were looking at my work and saying, oh, this is now good enough to like come into like Gretel's and Buck's and places like that. So yeah, I think that's what it's about. But also I've just been doing it for a while. So yeah.
Right. So just survive long enough and then eventually.
Exactly. Awesome. Plus, I guess I've met a lot of people, too, which really helps. I mean, networking and contacts are really the way to get in to good studios.
Yeah, for sure. And you're in New York, where I'm sure it's a little bit easier to get on the radar of studios like Buck and Gretel because their offices are actually there. Did you know people at those studios before they gave you calls?
With Gretel, no. But I think it was actually Claudio Salas who they came to him and asked him if he could do something. And then he was busy and then he recommended me. So that's how that happened. And then with Buck, it's just been I've just been trying to get in there for a while. So, yeah, just through personal contacts, like through meeting Dan Effinger, the CD there, just staying in touch and stuff. And, you know,
that's awesome. Just persistence. Yeah, exactly. All right. So, and Zach, what about you? It's funny because right before we started recording, you had a little something drop on A Scripts, I assume you've been working on. So, like, maybe you can talk about that and what else you've been doing since mostly finishing the class.
Yeah. So, I just today, the day that we're recording this podcast, released a new tool called Swatcheroo.
Great name.
It's just like, thanks. Because it's like, you get little swatches and you can swap them and it just kind of, I don't know. I like to think I'm cute. That's really what it is.
You are.
It's a pun, I guess.
Yeah. But this is something, I started working on it like 3 years ago and it ended up in my archive of half-finished tools. And there's a ton in there. And then this April, I was, I guess, trying to show off to someone and talking about other stuff I was working on in the past that never made it to market. And decided to revisit, like, hey, why did I never finish this? And so I had no good answer. So kind of like on the side of the course is like a palette cleanser. I've been working on Swatcheroo, and then finally it's ready to come out with an amazing promo video, which is like my favorite part of the tool, which isn't the tool, just the video.
Yeah. The tool's okay, but the video is actually spectacular. It's like this, I watched a little bit of it.
Yeah, it's like this 2-minute kind of bizarre world short film about this shape-shifting bunny and or character. It's amazing. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. So is that really what you've been focusing on, just building, you know, additional tools? Are you still doing any sort of, you know, technical directing or pipeline building?
It's been a mix. Some of my ongoing clients I'm still working with. It's people have known that I've been off work for the length of production. So now I'm just easing back into it slowly, but I'm mostly intending to take the rest of the year pretty easily. Just for context, it's mid-November right now or early November. But yeah, so a bit of scripting, a bit of client work, a lot of personal stuff, like exploring new hobbies and things and just kind of like becoming a human again.
Yeah, you both did just run like a very long ultra marathon of sorts to get to the finish line of expression session. So why don't we start easing into the discussion of the class? And we reached out to our audience, as we always do for these episodes, and got some questions from the Peanut Gallery. And I put a bunch in there too, because, you know, I realized as I was kind of researching for this episode that there are things that I'm curious about, the two of you. So now I get to ask them and you have to answer them. It's the law. So first of all, I think one of the most interesting things about the class is, frankly, that there's two of you teaching it. And you two have sort of very different backgrounds in terms of your career paths and the things that you've sort of become known for. So, Zach, I'm curious, you know, like watching your role in this class, I mean, it's just becomes obvious instantly how good you are at coding. And I'm curious if, like, did programming and coding just kind of come naturally to you? Like, is your brain just wired that way, or did you have to work super hard to get where you are?
I think it's a bit of both. For context, though, like, I took a programming class in high school. I was one of those, I don't know what to take, but I have a few interests, so I'm just going to dive deep on those. Like, I took a computer hardware and a computer programming class in high school, and like all of the maths, which in retrospect wasn't a great choice, but whatever. So I had some foundation of it from forever ago. Then in my short stint at college, I had a programming class, but I don't remember any of that. So I've kind of toyed with it over my adult life, but it was really just through expressions and like trying and failing and then failing and then failing and then failing.
Right.
Before things kind of started to click. And
that's pretty standard. I mean, that's the metaphor for the entire motion design career path. Fail enough times until you're successful.
Like, yeah.
Yes. Hey, whoa, how about that? How about that? There we go. All right, so Noel, I want to ask you about how it's been for you to really get comfortable with expressions and coding. I'm just totally stereotyping you here, but I mean, you know, you dress really well and you live in New York and you go to museums and you know about art history and you're a really good designer. Like you don't fit that mental stereotype of really good at coding. And yet, as you've taught this class with Zach, I've seen you get really good, really, really good at writing expressions. So I'm curious if that was hard for you, if you felt like you were fighting your art brain to learn this.
Not at all, actually. I feel like it augments rather than fights against. And I should say also that, you know, I wear glasses, so I am part of the nerd family. Just, you know.
This is true. Yeah. I forgot. I should have mentioned that.
But no, I feel like this in teaching this class, I did learn a lot more about expressions and just through working with Zach, just like how to make my code better, which was amazing. But I think that it does really augment, like the random art generator project that we do is the kind of stuff that I really like to do where I kind of just use code to make a big mess and then try to rein that in and make something kind of artistic out of it. Or I don't know, for me, the process has been like, I was the guy that, you know, was full-time motion and then I learned like wiggle. And then I was like, wow, that blew my mind. But then like, I didn't know what to do with it. You know what I mean? And right. Then like over the years, like a snowball rolling down a really, really not very steep hill. Like I was just gaining this knowledge. But yeah, now I think as a result of making the class and working with Zach, it's just turned it up to 11 for sure. And I just think expressions are great for everything now. Like I'm like the hammer now that just sees everything as a nail. Like every job, I'm just like, ooh, I could write an expression for that. I'm like kind of stuck in a permanent rabbit hole.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, and it's a deep rabbit hole. So, I mean, you're getting me thinking because like there's a lot of different things expressions open up for you. And I think the one that's sort of the most obvious because there's tools out there that are built upon expressions is now you can create these rigs. You can get very technical and create these things that sort of automate tasks. But you can also use expressions to sort of do some of the dirty work for you, like, you know, randomizing things and creating motion without keyframes and all this kind of stuff. I mean, does one of those areas kind of appeal to you more than another, or are you just sort of now all in with expressions?
Well, I mean, like any animator or motion graphics person, I'm trying to save time all the time. And so, yeah, certain expression things, now that I've learned them, that I kind of have them under my belt, they're really great time savers. And other ones are kind of more, for me, at least artistic prompts a little bit. So I think it's a mix. You know, I like to save time and I'm lazy, just like anybody. But I also, I like the experimental side sometimes where I'm not sure what the outcome will be. And I think expressions, for me, they're handy for that as well, just to play.
That's a good point. Yeah. All right. Well, that leads to our first question. And it's a very simple one. And it's one that, I mean, this is almost like a devil's advocate question that I ask sometimes when I'm talking to people who use a lot of expressions. I think I asked Sandra the same thing. You know, I'm an animator. And I go into the graph editor and I manipulate the curves and the keyframes, and that's how I do my thing. Why should I care about expressions? You know, like what's the point?
I mean, I don't think it takes away from any of it. It's like you still need to do the animation. You still need to massage those curves. But it's more like what happens when you need that same curve to repeat 50 times? Okay, you'll copy and paste your keyframes. Right. Amazing. And then you want to tweak the timing. And now you're like, oh, crap. Like, that's a pain to do without some sort of tool or something. Versus, if you use the handy-dandy loop-out expression, you just have to do the keyframes once, and the expression will do the work of repeating it a bunch of times. It's not really about taking work away from you. It's about making your life easier, kind of like augmenting the work you're already doing to save you headache and hassle.
Right. And also depending on the kind of motion work that the person's doing, like if you're all about versioning like 100 different lower thirds or something like that, I think expressions are really going to be helpful. But if you're, you know, just like hand animating one thing, it might not be as helpful. So it depends on the situation, I think, too. But I think they're useful across the board, though, for any motion person.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think you kind of summed it up, Zach. It just makes your life easier and it lets you do the fun part and let the computer do the boring part. Yeah. Loop is a great example. I mean, you know, there's a lot of sort of fake UI elements that are used in this class and actually in the visual effects class that we also recently completed. We're using expressions there just to create easy animation that doesn't take any time to set up, just because a lot of times you just need something to be happening, you know, in this tiny little design element, and you don't really want to get in there with keyframes. So yeah, I think, I mean, that's a good kind of, that's a good way to get into this conversation. The next question, you know, you were talking, Noel, about the rabbit hole that you're looking down now. The question is, why are After Effects artists so obsessed with expressions? It seems like everybody wants to learn them. Is it necessary for success in this industry? And I've asked myself that same question, because I could tell you, you know, when we put out a YouTube video with some really fancy, crazy expression thing in there that is, you know, probably not actually all that useful to most people who watch it, it gets so many views. You know, there's almost like this version of expression porn or something that we can sort of, we get trapped by. And I think that, you know, they're incredibly useful and amazing, but maybe not for the reasons most people think about initially. So I'm wondering, what do you guys think about that? Like, why are our After Effects artists just so obsessed with expressions?
Okay, I just want to jump in and say, since the existence of Cyclops, the After Effects tool that will overlay like handles and all your nulls into a render for like behind the scenes stuff, that's exploded too. I don't think seeing super complex expressions as something different. People are just so into the whole, how is it made? Show me the how is the sausage made? Show me the behind the scenes thing.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I mean, what do you think, Noel? Like, were you ever in that camp of like, oh, I really want to learn expressions, and you're not quite sure why, you just know you do?
I was more in the camp of like, this seems interesting, but I'm scared of it. But then I realized over time that I could actually do it. But I don't know. I think partially for me and partially for some people, it's just because it's a different thing in After Effects. Like, you're using this tool all the time. Maybe you've been working with this for a decade, and then all of a sudden there's this new thing to learn that's just cool and exciting. You know what I mean? I think like that's part of it for me. It was just like, wow, this is a whole other facet of motion that I never even knew existed at a certain point. And then I just want to get good at it. You know what I mean? Because we're all kind of like self-starter people that once we understand something, we're like, let me dive into that. You know, I think that's how it is.
Right. So you just said that you were initially scared of it, which I think is pretty common, because, you know, there in our minds, I think mentally, as creative people, we sort of tend to separate the left and right brain with this hard, you know, this giant wall saying, well, on this side is animation and design, on this side is code, and they're very separate. And I don't actually believe that's the case. But I'm wondering if you just talk a little bit about what was that fear? What were you worried about? And then did you find that the fear was unfounded? Or, you know, like, was it actually easier than you thought to learn?
It's a little of both. I think the fear is partially just for me is like, I learned this kind of working with Zach as well, is that like I have an expectation that I'll be able to pick something up quickly and that things will be kind of easy for me, which is not always the case, but that's sort of my expectation about things. And I think part of the fear was just like that it seemed complicated enough maybe that I wouldn't be able to do that. And so I tended to kind of avoid certain of the complex parts of it. But I think actually it was easier to get into it than I thought and to learn a lot of it. Although I will say there were some parts that are so complex that, again, I started to fear them, even though I had a much better basis. Like when we got into the sort of two comp, two world space transformation parts, I sort of got confused a little bit. So yeah, there's parts of this that are complex for me even still that I fear.
And I just want to add in, a lot of that layer space transform was also complex for me. Like, I always kind of understood the principles, but it took building out a lesson and teaching it for me to really connect and understand it natively.
Yeah. And actually, you're reminding me of something that we talked about when we started outlining this class. And this was something that I know when we were outlining was really important, and you two really focused on getting this across. With code, I think like beginners tend to focus on, I need to learn the syntax. I need to learn the commands, and that's what I'm learning. And then in truth, what you're learning are concepts and these ways of logically piecing things together. I know we kind of, you know, in the promo for the class, we joke around and you start saying, oh, you need this mental model of this thing. But that's actually what coding really is about to me. It's not the actual code you type in. I mean, it doesn't matter really what that is, because you, in Python, you use this, in JavaScript, you use this, in Ruby, you use this. It's all the same. It's the concept of a loop or an array or a function or things like that. And so I always thought that that was the hardest part to learn. And one of the questions here is just, are expressions hard to learn? And I'm curious, you know, I mean, Zach, for you, I mean, like, what was the harder part? Was it just memorizing all the JavaScript commands you need, or was it in the syntax, or was it that conceptual part, that higher level, like, how do I actually iterate through a list and update these values, you know, in an efficient way?
No, it for me, it's definitely a matter of learning how to kind of formulate questions or problems. And that's something we go over a ton in the course, and something even online I try to tell people when they're trying to solve problems. The code, the actual stuff you're writing, is not as important as understanding what you're trying to accomplish. And so maybe the result is that you have to loop through layers, but really you're trying to ask the question of, how do I look at everything in my comp and do a thing? Like, it's breaking down the task into a series of plain English sentences that I think is more work or harder to grasp, because it's that problem-solving side. And then online, you just turn that into Google and you go find the code bits you need, but you got to figure out what you're trying to accomplish first.
Right. Like, if you need to grab the first letter of a string and make it a capital letter, just being able to say that out loud now gives you a Googleable thing. And, you know, like, the JavaScript itself is easy to find, but it's just that conceptual part. Noel, was it difficult for you to kind of get your brain trained up to think that way?
I mean, the problem solving stuff is really specific, it feels to me, like, per task, you know what I mean? So I don't think it was difficult, but I mean, if you don't know the code at all, I think it's also, you could struggle with that as well. I mean, I think it's true, you could just Google stuff, but, and the problem solving is the hardest part, and it definitely was for me too, but I think some of the code, like this, like, for Zach to say, it doesn't matter what you put in there, it's sort of like, yeah, for you, because you're so good at it. But for me, sometimes I struggle with the empty, you know, code box as well. Even if I know, like, what I wanted to say, like, in plain English, sometimes it is a little bit of a struggle to translate that into code for me. So, yeah, kind of a different take.
Yeah. Well, it was really cool to see by the end of the class. I mean, you were whipping up some absolutely ridiculous expressions, like stuff I, you know, I would watch the lessons as I was checking them, and I was like, God, I didn't know that. So much cool stuff in there. So next question is one that we get a lot, and I'm sure, you know, Zach, you've probably answered this a million times, but you can answer it once more. What's the difference between an expression, a script, and an extension?
Right. Well, an expression is like smiling or frowning. A script is a prescription from your doctor.
Oh, dear extension. God, here we go.
No, sorry. So expressions, they live on a specific property, on a specific layer inside of After Effects. And so it's like a wiggle on rotation. It's only on rotation, it only affects rotation, and it can't affect anything else. Whatever property you write it on, that's where it lives, and it'll always live there. A script is like a series of commands that runs on After Effects. So it's like, hey, After Effects, I need you to make three layers, name them Jonathan, and color the label blue. It's all stuff you could do by hand eventually, but it's like these one-time instructions that you're giving to After Effects. Now, extensions, they're like a fancier front end for a script. So the interface is shiny and probably more interactive, and they're prettier. But behind the scenes, they still just run commands on After Effects. You still have to press one button and it does one series of things on the software.
Perfect. And I think one thing that, you know, we should point out is that there most scripts, maybe not most, but lots and lots of scripts apply expressions for you. So, for example, if you download Duik and you're rigging a character, what Duik is doing is just a ton of manual labor and putting expressions onto properties for you so you don't have to. And so these three tools tend to all, you know, sort of mix and match and work together in the end.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of neat as well in that the kind of the scripts and expressions work together in that way. But it's like there, you could theoretically save all the expressions out of a Duik setup and then apply them manually to something else, but you wouldn't do that. You would just use the script panel to apply those to your next project.
Exactly. So yeah, it's just sort of like greater and greater levels of time saving, I guess is a way to look at it. So here's another question. I guess this is kind of related to, you know, why does everybody want to learn expressions? And it's a little bit of a softball. Do expressions make your work better? Noel, you tell me.
Well, yes, they do, Joey. I think,
Of course, yeah, that's the secret.
They can make you work faster. They can just help you save time, which I guess is the same thing. Or they can also just enable you to think and work in a different way, which can sometimes be really instructive in our field, since a lot of times it's easy to fall into doing things the same way over and over again. And if you have this new tool, maybe you can change that up and do something new and then kind of get used to that system as well. So definitely makes your work better.
Zach, here's a question for you. How much math does someone need to know to get good at expressions? I think that's a huge fear of motion designers. Oh my God, I'm going to have to like remember some of that algebra I learned.
Yeah, that's sort of a pet peeve. I asked at one point, just online, you know, is there anything people want to know about expressions? And a lot of the feedback I got back was saying like, yeah, I don't really know math, or I'm not good at math. And it's sort of cool, great. I didn't ask that. I don't care whether you know math. Like, think of, again, I go to Wiggle because it's the most understandable. Wiggle is an expression and you have to learn how it works. And it just moves something randomly. Where's the math in that? Like, nothing there has anything to do with math.
Right.
And so if you're doing expressions, or if you're using expressions to sort of augment or work with stuff already there, there's no requisite that you use math in your expressions. It's like, if you're writing a book, how much... I'm trying to come up with an analogy here that makes sense. But the idea is like, if you're not doing things that involve math, you don't need to do math. It's not like every expression is going to use trigonometry or whatever. So they're sort of very distinct.
Yeah, I have a different take on this. I feel like you do need to have some basic math skills. Like even in the Wiggle example, like if you're talking about frequency, you have a certain number of frames per second in your comp. So you can't really set the frequency higher than that. Otherwise, you're really not doing anything, for example. So there's like basic math that I think that kind of plays into this, but it's not complex at all. It's definitely not algebra or trigonometry or anything like that. It's like a lot of adding and subtracting, plus like having to remember, like, if it's in the parentheses, that gets multiplied first. And if, you know, after the parentheses, that kind of stuff, like basic math stuff. I think you do need to know. Sorry to contradict.
No, it's good. That's...
No, I think, yeah, I think you're right. I'll add to that too, Noel, that, you know, I think that when people say I'm not good at math, they don't mean I can't add and subtract. Exactly. I think maybe they like just didn't do good in geometry or pre-calculus or something. And right. I think a lot of people tell themselves a story that isn't true. I'm not good at math. Well, no, it's not true. You haven't practiced math enough. You know, like, you know, the math is, it's a set of rules that you follow. It's the same as anything else. If you can learn After Effects, for God's sakes, you can learn a little bit of trig. It's way easier than, you know, I'll tell you what, PEMDAS is much easier than After Effects' is order of operations. All right. Like that. if you're listening to this podcast, you can definitely learn some basic geometry. With that said, you really almost never have to, unless you're building some crazy rig that actually relies on trig. And in the class, I think, you know, there's a couple of things that are in there that are advanced for the most part. I mean, you guys are just showing how to be clever and, like, you know, use the built-in functions After Effects gives you to automate stuff. And you don't really need, you know, you don't need tangent and cosine and arc cosine, you know, all these things. It's pretty basic.
And though, to be fair, we do talk about like sine and cosine, but we're not using them as mathematical trigonometrical functions. We're just like, hey, if you type this thing into your expression, you can make something wave up and down forever. So there is some mathematical objects we're using, but we're not using them in the context of like learn trig.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could just like give that sine function a different name. This is the wavy function, you know, and just kind of abstract it away. Yeah. Awesome. All right. This was like sort of a oddly specific question. Recently, I started learning processing. And for anyone listening that doesn't know, processing is this programming language that lets you generate visuals. So it's programmatic animation and design. And I'm halfway through this book and I'm slowly understanding the possibilities of it for motion graphics. My question is, for After Effects, can I use this little coding knowledge that I have with vectors, forces, array lists, random number generators, or are expressions completely different? I think I know the answer to this. Zach, what do you think?
Do you want to field it first?
Let me take a stab at it. So yes, it's totally different. yeah, so like Zach said, expressions are bits of code that sort of determine the behavior of a property on a layer. And processing lets you set up far more elaborate behaviors, particles and reactivity and things like that. You can do some of that with expressions. You can certainly use trap code particular and put an expression on, say, like the particle birth rate and tie that to the amplitude of an audio file. I mean, you could do things like that. But processing is really about creating an entire sort of system that then generates visuals for you. And you'd have to get that kind of fidelity and interactivity with expressions, you'd have to do, you know, 100 other things in After Effects. Expressions alone aren't going to do it. Whereas with processing, code alone can do a whole lot for you. How was that? How'd you rate that?
I think that's a great answer as far as talking about whether or not processing the same like workflows makes sense in both, which they don't. But what will carry over is that processing is based on JavaScript. And the expression engine in After Effects is based on JavaScript. And so the actual syntax and code tools you're learning, those will carry over. Like there's still the same math stuff, still the same way of working with text and arrays and numbers and Booleans and if else. All of that will kind of give you a leg up. But it's just the actual ways of using it that won't really carry over. Expressions are a little unique in that they run on every frame, on every property, all the time. And there's sort of things you have to learn there. Plus, both processing and After Effects, they have a lot of custom utilities built into them. So some stuff that you just know in one won't exist in the other.
Right. Like I'm assuming in processing, you know, if there is a wiggle function, it's called something different as an example.
Yeah, exactly. Like wiggle is very specific to After Effects.
That's really cool. I didn't actually know that processing used JavaScript. So, I mean, in that case, I think a lot of the concepts and expressions will be familiar. I mean, you know, towards the end of the class, Zach and Noel get into loops. I mean, a loop is a loop. And, you know, the way that you add two arrays together is the way you add two arrays together and things like that. So cool. All right. Well, then I need to revise my answer to, yeah, kind of.
It's very much a yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Noel.
I'm just going to stay silent.
Okay. Let's start talking about the course itself, which I have to say, I am so incredibly proud of how that came out. I mean, you two did all of it. I barely had to do anything other than convince you to do this. You guys absolutely killed it. So, all right. So we're going to start talking about the class now. And one of the questions, which is a good question and one that has an interesting kind of backstory to it. Why did you guys decide to teach this as a duo? This is the first ever, you know, team taught class at School of Motion, and why did you guys want to do this together?
Well, I mean, okay, so the way that I remember this working out is that I really was pushing for Zach to teach this class because he's obviously naturally this great expert. But Zach wasn't sure if he would really be able to do it all by himself and to really translate his knowledge into a really good class where the information flowed well. So that's kind of how we started talking. We were kind of working together on a project before all this, and we had developed this rapport that we thought was really fun and excellent. And then I basically went to you, Joey, and said, like, hey, we could do this together. And that it just seemed to kind of fit, you know?
Yeah. And I have to say, for anyone who takes this class, it's also sort of a technical marvel, the way it's been put together. Zach lives in Los Angeles and Noel lives in Manhattan. And they're thousands of miles apart. And there are many, many points in the course where they're talking to each other and then sort of throwing to each other almost like a news anchor. And now we'll go back to Zach and he'll do this part. And it's also, I would say it's going to be many years before another class comes along that has more puns in it than this one.
on that technical note, we actually, and it's not like an editing trick. Noel is working on a project and then I keep working on the same project. And we actually go back and forth in the same AEPs for a lot of the lessons. Like we actually wrote up this page of sort of like rules and thoughts on how to teach a class together. But yeah, it's just, there was a lot of thought that went into it, how we can work together, and going from how do we do this technically to how do we make sure that we're communicating and we're not overstepping each other and that we're not cutting each other off. And yeah, it was cool. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch. And I know everyone who takes the class is going to get a kick out of it. I mean, the information and the teaching and the lessons, the exercise, all of that stuff is, we've really upped our production value this year. And we got some amazing artists to provide assets and even just the concepts themselves. Like, we put a ton of thought into it. And then on top of that, there's this layer of like stand-up comedy that kind of like flows through the whole thing.
More like dad jokes, but yes.
Yeah, okay. You know, I was trying to elevate it a little bit.
But I think one of the things that's really cool about it is that Zach and I do have very different skills, and we're similar in our sense of humor, which is what drives a lot of the class, but we're otherwise really different. So I think that makes a really interesting combination of people.
Yeah, totally.
It was very cool to me as we were building the course to kind of see which kind of exercise and which lesson Noel got super into and super attached to versus the one I were. Because like his favorite exercise is super artistic and abstract and creative. And mine is, of course, super technical and kind of linear. And like, there's so much little details going on, but it's very precise. And yeah, I think that speaks to us very well.
So here's another devil's advocate kind of question. And I almost didn't even include this one because it's insulting. No, I'm just kidding. What's the difference between this course and just watching a bunch of YouTube tutorials? Because there are probably over a million hours of expression tutorials out there. And so, you know, why do we need this class?
Cohesion and consistency is what I would say. This was every lesson, every exercise builds upon the one before it. Like, there's the overall curriculum that we spent over 2 years, we spent a ton of time refining and getting down to this point. And I think a lot of the YouTube stuff is sort of just frivolously one-offs here and there, or they're assuming a lot of base knowledge that you don't have. But that's what I'd say.
Yeah, and I'd just add on that, you know, not only does each lesson build upon the next, but we really try to break things down into plain English. So we're not just like, here, do this. It's sort of like we're explaining as we go, like what we're doing so that it makes sense to people. So that when they do it, it makes sense to them. Some other expression tutorials I've seen are more just like, you know, do this and you can accomplish this. But we didn't want to do that.
Yeah, I think in the promo video, one of the things that Zach says is, you know, at the end of this, you'll know not just how to write expressions, but why. And I think that's kind of sums it up in a nutshell. I mean, that was sort of the through line that we tried to carry throughout the entire class. Is it's not enough to just know that this is the code you type in to do this thing. It's why, what, you know, like, because the goal is not to just teach students a fixed set of code and then that whatever's in the class, that's what they know and no more, no less. It's really to rewire their brains. Like, now you understand how to think, to use these tools. You know, I think what'll likely happen, what the goal is students take the class and afterwards they end up writing expressions using things that they didn't learn in the class. But now that they know what's possible, they can go out, you know, you guys provide resources. Here's other places to go learn. Here's how you, you know, like find a JavaScript function that you didn't know existed, all these things. And curriculum really is the answer to that question for any School of Motion class. I mean, that's really why. That's why we exist, to be honest, is, you know, because if you take the Swiss cheese approach to learning where you're just biting off teeny little bits of knowledge that are all scattered about, taught by 100 different people, it works if you do it for long enough. Or you can just sort of, you know, you can just sort of go through a class that was curated and designed from day one to sort of teach you all the things you need to know. The other thing I'll say too, that it may not be obvious to people who haven't taken a School of Motion class before. All of our classes have exercises that get assigned, and this class is no different. And so not only are we giving you challenges to complete that really are based on real world things that happen. Here is a design for an end frame, and there's going to be 10 versions, and we want you to build a rig that does X, Y, and Z, and we're giving you artwork. That doesn't happen for free tutorials and stuff like that. And so it's really giving you an opportunity to like test the knowledge that you just learned. And of course, there's teaching assistants and, you know, you're getting help with the code and there's a support, like a student private Facebook group where you can get support on code and things like that. So there's a lot more to it than just the content, but even just talking about the content, it's very different.
Yeah, I would second that. It's a lot like all the other School of Motion classes in terms of its attitude, you know, which is that it's definitely a focused place where you can just, like a boot camp, where you'll just really be put through the test. And by the end of it, you will come out with a ton more knowledge.
So speaking of knowledge, here's a good question. How much After Effects do I need to know to take this course?
You should be very comfortable in After Effects. We are assuming you understand layers, layer order, hierarchy, like parenting, pre-comps. Like you should know your way around After Effects. We kind of skip over a lot of the foundational After Effects stuff. But if you've never used expressions or you're a little bit, that's more where this is. That's what this is about. Like, this is about going from zero or very little to comfortable in expressions to add to your already existing motion design workflow.
Right. Like if you take an animation bootcamp, that's plenty, you know, familiar enough with After Effects, I think.
I would agree. I mean, I would even say if you've taken After Effects Kickstart, you know your way around After Effects by that point. There are some things that, you know, you may not have encountered before that you'd see in expression session. But for the most part, I think anyone who has a few months of experience will be able to at least grasp what's going on. I would say, you know, expressions are not something you want to start learning 6 months into your After Effects career. I would get a little more than that under your belt. But yeah, there's really nothing, you know, app-wise or program-wise that is too advanced. I mean, the code is the advanced thing. I mean, that's the big stepping stone right there.
Yeah, familiarity with a couple of effects, you know, the idea of pre-comping and that kind of thing. But yeah, you're right. After somebody's worked with After Effects for, I don't know, a year, they're good, I think.
Yeah.
Totally. Okay. Is this course actually practical? I feel like we keep circling this idea of like expressions or this rabbit hole. And they can be kind of a distraction. And I know that when we started outlining this, we were very clear we did not want that to be the case here. So how would you answer that? Is this course actually practical? Are you learning things you'll actually use?
Oh, no. Definitely not.
I thought you said no.
No, I said no.
It's that Canadian accent.
I assume that if you're taking this class, you're already interested and you kind of know that it's going to help you a lot. But if you're on the fence or whatever, definitely, I think it will help. It's very practical. I mean, like we said before, depending on what you do with After Effects, like this could be something that really changes your career. If you're all about versioning things and, you know, like that kind of work, then this is definitely going to help you with that. But I think for anybody, even just, you know, your average motion person, I think this is going to really increase their game, make them work faster, and give them, I think, a newfound excitement about working with After Effects, too. Make it more cool.
Yeah. So this would be a good time to, I guess, there's another question on here asking, what will I be able to do by the end of the course? And I think this might be a good place to just talk about some of the topics that you cover and some of the, you know, what are some of the example setups that you build and things like that?
Yeah. We try to cover a wide range of things, but as mentioned before, kind of the overarching thing is not necessarily that you'll be an expression wizard at the end, but if you're copying and pasting stuff from online, you'll understand what it's doing. You'll be able to read it and modify it for what you need. Or if you open up a project with somebody else's expressions, you'll get what they're trying to accomplish and hopefully be able to work with it. So some of our assignments are things like, you know, the classic example is doing lower thirds, where you're having elements and shape layers and objects respond to any amount of arbitrary text. So if your name is Noel, then your little rectangle graphics is short. If it's Corinman, it's super long. And that's sort of an easy go-to thing to understand. Or having the whole follow the leader graphic, where you've got a whole bunch of layers duplicated, and each one is following the layer before it a little bit offset in time.
Or how to harness the power of randomness to make art. Or, certainly we go a lot into expression controls and kind of how to master all of those different expression controls, which I think is the kind of problem solving that will jump up in your work all over the place if you start to think about it.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of examples of just how to automate certain things, you know, making things animate without you having to do anything, using time, using loops. You know, towards the end, I mean, the last few lessons, they do get into some pretty cool uses of expressions, you know, tying After Effects layers, which are 2D or 2.5D, tying those to the actual 3D position of 3D renders and things that come out of Cinema 4D and stuff like that using layer space transforms. I thought the coolest thing that a couple of things that I thought were really cool in the class was learning how to manipulate the shape of paths for shape layers and masks and things like that, which is so useful if you're doing any kind of data visualization, if you're setting up rigs, you know, that are driven by values, and you also show how you can do that. And then, you know, there's always a final project. It's sort of like the last boss that we always have in our classes. And in this one, it's such a cool example. It's this entirely sort of fake UI, data-driven dashboard thing with really cool artwork, but also there's just so many neat things happening in there, how you can automatically, you know, turn layers on and off and select things visually using loops and iterating through layers and checking, you know, this property against this one. And I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there where I know, Zach, you said you may not be an expressions wizard by the end of it. I mean, it depends on your definition of wizard. I mean, I don't know. I think for most people, they would say that doing the stuff that you teach in the class does indeed make you a wizard.
That's fair. That's a good point. Yeah. I just mean, like, yeah, don't be intimidated by thinking it's going to be huge and scary. Like, this is very much an everyday workplace acceptable level. Like, everyone is going to benefit from this. It's not too far out of reach.
Yeah. I think the most valuable things that are just instantly valuable are learning how to set up really simple rigs with expression controls that drive things, and learning how to automate layouts, you know, basing, like you were saying, like the width of a rectangle off of how wide someone's last name is. That kind of stuff, it really does save you, you know, days and weeks of your life over the course of a career.
Yeah, and not just that, but it's, I mean, overall, this idea of spending a little bit more time at the beginning to make your life easier later. And for me, I think the first way I really got into expressions was doing a ton of lower thirds, where, like, you had to go into a million comps and duplicate each one, change the text. And so, like, that's just a pain in the butt. And so we show ways where you can, like, have your text layers pull the text from the comp name. So instead of having to rename text stuff, you can just build these rigs that make your life easier. Or, like, retime things based on sliders instead of time remap keyframes. And it's, like, working smarter, not harder, or, like, a little bit harder, but also smarter.
Yeah, that was actually something that I really got out of working with you, Zach, was how to make the code modular so it fit into almost every circumstance, so you could kind of copy and paste it into whatever layer and it would still work. That was really nice. So the modularity, I think, is something that people will get out of this as well.
Yeah, this is just like best practices for stuff like that I didn't know either. And also, one of the things that was really cool that I learned in this class is just how smart you can get with master properties and using that to automate a whole bunch of stuff. And this kind of, I guess, is a good place to talk about this next question, which I think is really just about, like, you know, a lot of our classes, you know, my goal for our students is that you take a class, it gives you a skill that either, you know, opens up something creatively for you, or more likely helps you take one more step in your career. You know, you're adding a new skill that's going to help you get your foot in the door, whatever the next stop is in your career. And so as far as this class goes, are there any new, quote, services I'll be able to offer to my clients after taking the class? I mean, how do you think that someone who's already a pretty good animator, decent designer, and then they take this class, how does having this tool help them, you know, make money and get booked and stuff like that?
I think one quick answer to this is that if you work at a studio, or if you freelance around, or if you have a full-time job somewhere and you get really good at expressions and people know that, they'll start asking you to do more things using expressions, and it'll kind of increase your profile no matter where you work. You'll be that guy or gal or whatever who knows expressions. And already that's sort of been happening to me after teaching the class a little bit. People have an expectation like, oh, okay, you'll be able to help us solve this problem because you know expressions. And so it's kind of a nice place to be. That's just one thing. But that's what I've noticed right away.
Yeah, and there aren't many people that do it but there is definitely a place in this industry for the more technically oriented. And I think I've said this in like half our podcasts in the chorus with the guests, but I am one of the few full-time technical directors in motion design, meaning my whole world is expressions and scripting and not even necessarily writing code, but just organizing projects and setting up rigs in After Effects, just with master properties and sliders and stuff. And this course will kind of put you along that path, or at least show you that this path exists. And there's other facets to motion than just, you know, necessarily being a designer or artist or in that row.
Right. Yeah. I think this will add to your confidence just in general, too. If it's like your client asks you to pull data from a JSON file or a CSV, you're going to know how to do that. You know what I mean? You won't be like, I have no idea. Now I have to Google this. You'll just know. Same with MoGurts and things like that, too. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking that, you know, when I read that question, what I was thinking was, I mean, the most obvious answer to me was you've got MoGurt files, you've got templates, and they're all driven by expressions. And you can, you know, after taking this class, certainly you'll be more than equipped to make really responsive layouts and have check boxes that you can click one thing and 10 things happen and it changes the entire dynamics of your template. And all of those things, I mean, there's kind of this Wild West right now of, you know, places to sort of create sellable elements like that, where, you know, there's an army of editors out there that don't want to learn After Effects, but need, you know, sort of bespoke, customized templates and lower thirds and full screen graphics and stuff like that. We actually, you know, this year we built an entire sort of visual identity graphics package for all of our classes in MoGurt, you know, using MoGurt files so that our editors can use them when they're editing. And there's a lot of expressions driving them. And if Zach hadn't been working on the class, I probably would have hired him to set all that stuff up. There aren't that many people out there that are sort of known for this. And to Noel's point, it's funny, that definitely happened to me when I was freelancing and stuff like that. I mean, I sort of was one of the first After Effects artists that I knew that started using expressions, and I got the hang of them pretty quickly. And then I would get booked sometimes just because of that when I was freelance, because they knew that, you know, I could come in and I could animate, but then I could set up a rig and give it to the other animators so that they didn't necessarily need to know how to do what I just did. I could sort of scale myself a little bit. And so that's another way of looking at it. It's really kind of a
yes, and then you can charge a little more too, I'm going to say.
An astute observation there, Noel. Well, I mean, that's where we're going next, right? So how much did you raise your day rate after?
Thousands.
Kidding, not kidding. So, you know, we touched on the difference between expressions, scripts, and extensions. And this class does not teach you how to write scripts or extensions. But after this class, how much more would you need to learn in order to build, say, like a basic script and then eventually move into extensions?
That's sort of a deliberate path. Like, that's an intentional decision you'd have to make. It's not a, I'm running expression, whoops, now I'm selling scripts online. There is a lot to learn to go from expressions to scripting and extensions and so on, but it's not out of the question. And that is the exact route that I took. I was writing expressions and I had mostly abandoned at this point blog talking about them. And I just wanted to learn about scripting. And so using the After Effects Kodi awareness I had from expressions, I had like a great foundation for when I would start looking at scripts to sort of understand how those work. But it really is a sort of a different philosophy. But you know that both of them work on layers and comps and keyframes and project items. And so you're already in that world. So it's much easier to jump. It's like if you know Photoshop, it's easier to go to After Effects versus if you've only used Microsoft Paint or whatever the macOS equivalent is, it's probably harder to go from that to After Effects.
And are the coding languages the same between expressions and scripts?
Yes-ish.
No.
So there, After Effects is two expression languages. One is the old ExtendScript one, and then there's the newer JavaScript language. Now, the old ExtendScript one is the same as the scripting language. However, there are certain things just in the scripting side and certain things just in the expression side, but it's the same thing. And both of them are based off of a version of JavaScript from like 20 years ago. However, the new expression language is like brand new modern JavaScript, which scripting doesn't have access to. So it's this sort of yes and no, but it's all based on JavaScript. So that's a great place to start.
And how hard was it to learn the scripting part once you already had the expression part down?
I don't think there's a satisfying answer to that question. Certain things are harder than others. It's really a matter of the task you're trying to accomplish. Like for me, to write something that will loop through every layer and rename it. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. To create a script that draws a custom panel in your interface and is very interactive and modifies a whole bunch of things. Well, that's more complicated just because you're trying to do more tasks. And so I think it's if you're willing to put in, you know, some time after work, after hours, learning about scripting and development and best practices, then it's attainable. But how much work it is really depends on what you're after or, you know, where you're coming from.
Got it. All right. Well, script extravaganza session coming 2020, right? And we'll all know how to.
Oh, yeah. Intro to scripting. I've given that at a few conferences. We can do it.
Oh, I love it. All right. You heard it here first. Last question here. You know, we touched on this a little bit. You know, how much After Effects do I need to know? But I think, you know, a lot of times when we launch a new course and there's a lot of excitement in it, students want to be prepared. They want to be able to get the most out of it. And so if there's someone out there and they're thinking of taking this class and they have this question, what would you say? And the question is, what can I do to prepare my mind, body, and soul for expression session? And you can focus on any one of those three or all three.
Coffee.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Cookies.
Coffee and cookies.
Ties.
Coffee and cookies. Yeah, that's
in
that's
the evening,
answer.
Perhaps some wine after your coffee.
Oh, there's many layers to that joke. Yeah, I mean, I honestly, like this class, like all of our other classes, I mean, it's once you've got the minimum required level of knowledge, the class takes you the rest of the way. So if you're comfortable with After Effects, I think that's really all you need. I'm assuming this person's probably wondering, like, you know, I want to at least have some kind of expression knowledge so it's not just totally new to me. Like, where, you know, what are some things that they could do if they wanted to just kind of get their feet wet while they wait for the class to start?
Yeah, I think there's no harm in starting to look online and check out YouTube intro to expression classes, read the blog post, read the tutorials. There's so many resources out there. And in the interest of full disclosure, we're probably going to tell you that the style of coding they write isn't great, but that's okay. Having any foundation will help, but it's not necessary. It's just once you're in the course, just have patience and bear with it. A lot of it will be unfamiliar and take some getting used to, but you know, we structured in such a way that we're with you the whole time and, you know, everything's kind of building upon itself. And it's just have patience and be open to a different way of thinking, especially if you're super, super artful and creative and you've never worked in this world before.
Yeah, I would second that. Plus coffee and cookies.
Absolutely.
And I would say muscle memory. Like one of the things that happens when you start writing code is all of a sudden you're doing all of these things that you just normally don't do. Like you're hitting the semicolon a lot and curly brackets. You know, there's all these buttons on the keyboard even that you're going to have to like look down and find them the first time you have to type these things. And so just even following along with a basic tutorial on how to set up some simple expressions, just so you get in the habit of like, okay, I hold option, I click the stopwatch. Ah, this code editor opens. And then I type in something in camel case, which you'll learn about that. And then you put a semicolon at the end. Just doing it, even if you don't really know what you're doing, it gets your hands used to doing it. And it'll be a lot more comfortable, I think, when you start writing longer expressions.
Yeah. And one thing, I'm not sure how much you two would agree with me on this, but, you know, this is a course on expressions. This is not a course on coding. Like the fact that it's expressions in After Effects is a huge component to it. It's about how to work with layers and projects and animation and composition in a problem-solving way. And it just so happens that the solution is code. But it's really just problem solving and thinking differently about your projects.
Yeah, I'll second that as well. It's sort of like every assignment is like doing a puzzle. It's not necessarily hard. It's just the problem solving and how you get there. And then a few aha moments and then just writing some code. And you don't need to be good at math.
You can find out all the details about Expression Session at schoolofmotion.com. And of course, everything we talked about here can be found in the show notes on our site. I want to thank Noel and Zach for creating a pretty amazing course. There's really nothing like it out there. And I also want to give a shout out to Yana Friedman, Daniel Luna, and Ariel Costa, who all created animations for the course. The production value on Expression Session is crazy. And there's a big team behind the scenes making that all possible. So thanks to everyone who worked on it. And thank you for listening. It really does mean the world. Until next time.